So it's 2019 and people set goals. Does anyone like feel like they're on a great track for their goals? You're like stoked for this year. Literally, okay, one person in the balcony so far, a couple, okay. Is there anyone who's like 2020 will be my year? Cool, yeah, me too. So I'm gonna tell you about that. I have a friend named Cameron who works at Park Street, and he needed something from me while I was on break, but it was here. He needed a sound system. And so I was like, okay, yeah, I'll get you my key, because we like couldn't figure out when to get together because we kept forgetting to text each other back, which was so like us. So I decided one day that I was just gonna like put the key in his mailbox. So I was like, hey Cam, key's in your mailbox. Get whatever you need when you need it. So his event was over, and he kept trying to get a hold of me to get me my key. And at this point, it's like approaching the day I go back to work. I went back to work January 3rd. That's important, 3 days after the new year. So I was like, okay, I'll get this key from you. And I was with one of my friends, and I was like, I'm going to leave her house soon so I can come grab it around like 3 p.m. or before then. And he's like, okay, I'll be in a meeting. Just like interrupt it if you need it. I did not go to Cameron's office because I forgot. And then Cameron texted me like 5 hours later and was like, oh my gosh, I forgot to give you your key. And I was like, yeah, I forgot that it existed. So then the day before I go to work, he was like, okay, I'll put it underneath your mat at your house. He's like, I think that that was your house. So if there's a key under your mat, I put it there. And I was like, okay, cool, I'll get it. I go to work in the morning. I'll need to get into my office. I went back to work on a Thursday, so I went to Vine's Bakery. I don't get paid to plug this. She's just my best friend. And I go to Vine's Bakery, and I was like, I forgot the key. I did not get the key from under the mat. So I worked there from 8 to noon, and then I found out one of my coworkers was here, so I had her let me in my office, and I was like, okay, Sadie, don't forget the key. Like, get it when you go home. So I go home. I eat dinner. I go to bed, and I wake up the next morning, and I did not get the key from under my mat. So I'm like getting dressed. I'm like, get the key, Sadie. So I'm looking at myself in the mirror like that one character from Parks and Rec like looks at himself in the mirror and decides to tell himself things that are important. And I was like, you are having a great year so far. Just like get your key from under your mat. So I get in my car. I come to work. I am like driving down College Avenue, and I was like, not again. I forgot the key again. So I like turn around, but at this point it's like cold outside. It was not the nice day. So I go home. My doormat is frozen to the pavement. Wish I could make this up. So I was like, I need to get into my office. Like, Jamie does not work on Fridays. So I try to like jam the key under the mat. Not working. So I go into my house, and we have this like saw in the inside of our door, and it's like one of those flimsy, like, I don't know, what do they call them? Hand saws? And so I'm like on my front porch trying to like shove this saw under the mat, and all the while I'm like, I hope everyone driving down my street knows that I live here, right? Like, what is this girl doing? So it's too flimsy, and it just keeps bending. And I was like, okay, how do I do this? How do I do this? How do I do this? It, like, wasn't going to get warm soon, so I decided to go into my house and get a cup of boiling water and pour it over my doormat. So then I'm standing on my porch, just like the jaws of life, just like ripping this mat off of there, and then the last corner that I got up, the key was under. And I was like, thank God. So I go inside, I put the cup away, and I'm walking out of my door, and I'm like, whoever leaves this house next is going to fall. Because I just poured water, boiling water, all over my porch. And I was like, well, gotta go to work. So I resolved that 2020 is gonna be my year. But welcome to the ride with me. During 2019, I hope you enjoy. So hopefully your year is going better than mine. I can't remember a dang thing ever, so whatever. Tonight, completely unrelated, we are going to talk about Jesus. So we're going to jump into Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 through 33. Some of you may have heard this one before. It's when Peter gets to walk on water. Fun stuff. So we'll read that, and then we'll pray, and I'll say some things, and we'll do some other stuff later. So, immediately, he made the disciples, made the disciples get into a boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea, like you do. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, and they said, "It's a ghost!" And they cried out in fear. But immediately, Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter, one of the disciples, answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Jesus, I pray that you would begin to continually soften the hearts of the people in this room. But God, that this could be a place where we can hear from you, maybe for the first time ever. God, that you would speak to us in ways that only you know how. And that the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart would be pleasing to you. Amen. So on my left forearm, I have a tattoo of waves. My buttons won't come. There they are. There's more of them. And I got these when I was in, maybe I just graduated college. Yes. You know, I was trying to timetable this because I was in a friend's wedding and she was like, "You may not have a tattoo in my wedding." And so I got it like week after. Haha. So I have this tattoo on my arm and a lot of people will ask me what it means. And my next response is like, "Do you actually care?" Because sometimes people are like, "Oh, sweet tattoo," and they don't expect you to be like, "It's very much about the Lord." It's like, do you have time for me to tell you about my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ? Like, and I get it. It's on my arm. I did this. But so it has a lot to do, if any of you were ever wondering. You can tell all the people so they don't ask me anymore. It has a lot to do with the way that I see God. And so I think I've felt a lot of peace by the water my entire life. I grew up on the water. It's a place that I can like be centered. But it also, for me, I think of God in terms of water. So in the same way that water can be all of these things, I believe that God is strong and that he is necessary for life and that people play in water and that you can play in the presence of God and he's all-consuming and all of these different things. And so I got this on my arm as a signifier of like, one, you believe these things, and this is what God's done throughout your life. And two, like, there's biblical imagery about it, and you feel peaceful. So, like, hey, crazy person, calm down. There's peace on your arm. But we'll learn a little bit later. So, like, after I got that, I learned a thing that I had known. So I guess I remembered it. That peace, or that water in the Bible signifies chaos. And that's very important for us, but we're going to put that away for a second. But I did not tattoo water on my arm to remind myself of the chaos in my life. That would be unhelpful. But I think that there's a lot to learn about our own selves from reading this story about Jesus and Peter and that interaction on the sea. So back in the day, water was a symbol for chaos, and people weren't excited to be on the water like we were like we are today. It was a symbol for everything that is uncontrollable. And so the disciples find themselves in the middle of the sea between like 3 and 6 a.m. And they're completely terrified. So do you think that that sounds familiar to your life? does being in the middle of complete unknown, surrounded by chaos, and fearing that there's no safety around you anywhere sound metaphorically similar to any part of your life? It does mine. But in the midst of this chaos, Jesus appears. But the disciples don't exactly recognize him for who he is. They think he's a ghost. And he immediately reassures them of who he is. And in the middle of our own uncertainty, we don't always recognize that Jesus is coming for us, right? We're like, who's this scary ghost man coming towards me? And in the same way that he immediately reassures the disciples, he leaves no room really in our lives. When Jesus enters our chaos, our own fear has to leave. Because peace and fear and peace and chaos don't exist together. So to the disciples, the phrase that Jesus uses out there, he says, "Take heart, it is I." Now they would have recognized this as Jesus saying the phrase, "I am." That "I am" statement from Jesus is a smack in the face for them of a reminder of God's faithfulness throughout their past. So the Jewish people and the Israelites were always looking back to the Exodus that happened in the Old Testament because God proved that he was faithful. And so in the Old Testament, that "I am" is the name that God gave himself. And so they no longer had anything to fear on that water. And the Psalms speak volumes for the faithfulness of God as well. The writers of the Psalms proclaim that your way was through the sea and your path through the mighty waters, yet your footprints were unseen. And they also say in another one, they mounted up to heaven, they went down to the depths, their courage melted away in their calamity. They reeled and they staggered like drunkards, and they were at their wits' end. And then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and he brought them out from their distress. He made the storm be still, and the waves of the sea were hushed. So as if all of that wasn't already enough for those disciples in the boat to believe who it was, Peter not only asks Jesus to prove himself, but he asks him to be with him on the water. So a little bit of context. Only four chapters earlier, Jesus gives the 12 disciples the power to cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, and cast out demons. Directly before this story of Peter and Jesus on the water is Jesus and the famous story of him feeding the 5,000 people with only 5 loaves and 2 fish. That is where they came from, and those are the crowds that Jesus is sending away while these men are on the boat, and Peter's still like, prove it. I need you to prove that you're legit. So it's like I can picture Jesus being like, okay, I'll like walk on this stuff you're not supposed to walk on. Like, do you believe me yet? But again, like how many times is that us in our own story too? You experience God do the unimaginable. He restores a broken relationship in your life. He cures the cancer. He brings you out of the muck of depression or anxiety. He gave you life today. He's continually reassuring you that everything will in fact be okay because he's in control. And you and I experience these things, and we still need a sign. It's like completely maddening to me when I think about myself. And I laugh at the Israelites. Right after God parts the Red Sea, they accuse God of bringing them in the desert to kill them. They like were brought out of slavery through this miracle, and these people are like, OMG, we are in the desert. Were there not enough graves in Egypt that you had to bring us out here to kill us? And I'm like, guys, Jesus, or God, not Jesus yet, but God just completely parted water. That also doesn't happen. And so we are such fickle beings. But God is not. So Peter makes it out onto the water, and he walks toward Jesus, but the thing happened again. He got distracted, and he noticed the strong wind around him, and he became afraid. So he began to sink. And in his desperate cry for Jesus to save him, Jesus reaches out. But Peter's not completely off the hook yet, because Jesus wants to know why he was doubting him. It's as if Jesus were saying, "Hey, you have seen me minister to many crowds. You've seen me cleanse lepers and heal your own family, Peter. You've seen me still a storm before this. You've seen me drive out demons, give sight to the blind. I raised someone from the dead, and I just fed the masses. So why do you doubt me? What is causing you to hesitate?" So the rescue extended to Peter at this point is now for all of them in the boat when Jesus steps in and then the sea is calmed. They recognized Jesus for who he truly was, and they knew that only God himself could have power over complete chaos. They had nothing to fear. So there's this thing that goes around on social media that sounds something like this, where it's like, the phrase, "do not be afraid," is in the Bible 365 times. So for every day, you can be reminded to not be afraid. Have you seen this before? Cool. Now, I think that that is lovely. I don't know if it's true because I didn't look into it. But what I can tell you is that when Christ is in control of your life, you actually have absolutely nothing to fear. You don't even have to fear death itself because he also conquered that. So it's the beginning of 2019, and we have a choice right now on how we want to orient our lives this year. You don't have to wait until 2020. I'm not actually going to wait until 2020 to get my life together. I might just start doing like brain teasers so I can remember something ever. But we actually have a choice to fix our eyes on Jesus every single day. So how do you see Jesus? Do you see him as useful for your life or completely essential for your life? Because useful Jesus is treated like a little genie to make my life better on my terms. An essential Jesus completely transforms my life from the inside out in order to impact the world on his terms. Is he useful or is he absolutely essential? Essential Jesus gives you the desires of your heart, because when you are in relationship with him, his desires actually become yours. There's nothing new apart from him, even in this new year. There's nothing remade or transformed that doesn't include him. And nothing will satisfy you besides him. This is the moment where the parent is like, "Don't do this thing because you'll be sad." And you're like, "No, I'm totally going to do the thing." I want to tell you that nothing else will satisfy you except for Jesus. And I know that I'll even test that own statement from myself. I will go back to the things that I think satisfy me, and so will you. But if you have a knowledge in your heart that the thing that will actually satisfy is the love of Christ, you're able to continually reorient yourself with the help of the Holy Spirit to fix your eyes on Jesus. And nothing will give you life besides him. The only real solution for life change is centering our lives completely around Jesus. And there's a difference between being consumed by the chaos of our world and being consumed by God's grace. Because we're going to sing some songs in a couple minutes that talk about like sinking deep into God's love. And I don't want you guys to be like, "Excuse me, Sadie, you told me I'm supposed to walk on the waters, not sink into them." Remember, the waters signified chaos. I do not want you to sink into the chaos. I want you to rise above that with the Lord. But what is absolutely necessary for that to happen is for you to be consumed by the grace and the love of God. Because when the love of Jesus is completely overwhelming to you, nothing will overcome you.